Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Paranexus Universe. Today is Thursday, May 13, 2010. This is your host, Doug Kelly. Welcome to the show. I'm here with Grant Rubin as my co-host. Hey, Grant.
Hey, everybody.
We have an interesting topic, of course, tonight, experiments in time control, all about time travel and the sort of thing. That's something I think that interests about everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously has interested me my entire lives.
Ha! Me too.
A little joke,
yeah.
There. And so, yeah, go ahead, Grant.
Nothing, I'm sorry, Doug. Go ahead.
We've got the chat room opened up now, so if you had trouble getting into it, it's open now. Looks like we've got some folks in there. There is somebody on the line, the call-in line. If you happen to be on the site in the chat room, would you please identify yourself? We're trying to be a little cautious these days because some of the prank calls that we've had. And next week we should have John Rossi, our new call screener, on board. But if you'd like to call in with questions, the numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. You can also ask your questions in the chat room. And if you are in the chat room and you do want to call in, please let us know that you are there because we need that. And
yep.
That's that. Just want to try to avoid
the pranks. And don't be shy. Come on, and we don't bite if you're nice.
Hard anyway.
That's right.
All right, so tonight we are honored to have David Lewis Anderson, Ph.D. Dr. Anderson was born in, I believe it's Weirton, West Virginia. He's a physicist with interest in space-time physics, special relativity. I'm butchering it already. I told him I wouldn't.
Oh, you're doing fine.
Special relativity and
global
community service. And that kind of sums up, from what I can see. He's got degrees in engineering, physics, philosophy. He's got quite an impressive bio. He was employed at a young age by the U.S. Air Force, conducting advanced research and development at the prestigious Air Force Flight Test Center at Edwards Air Force Base in the Mojave Desert. He later founded an organization called TTRC, an advanced time technology research laboratory located on Long Island, New York. Some other things, Anderson provided one of his first comprehensive overviews of the historical views of time, time control, and time travel in a documentary, Time Travel, Journeys into Time, and he'll tell us during the show where people can get that. His ideas were later applied for the development of high-performance time reactor systems for energy production and time technology research at what is known today as the Anderson Institute. He is president and CEO of Anderson Multinational LLC, and in addition, he's been on a number of programs, including Coast to Coast, and he is also an ambassador, ambassador for youth for the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. Dr. Anderson, welcome to the program, and
Wow. Sorry
about that botch job.
Oh, hi, Doug and Grant. It is an absolute pleasure to be here on Paranexus Universe tonight.
Well, it's great to have you, and you've got a great site. We'll put the site in the chat room, too. It is linked off our website as well. But impressive website, a lot of information there. How did you get started or interested in time travel?
Well, the short answer would be by accident. Would you like me to expand on that a little bit, or is that sufficient?
Yes, sure. Please do.
Please do.
Well, actually, I was recruited at a pretty young age by the Air Force, and I got involved with Air Force Systems Command as a scientist working on high-speed navigation systems. It quickly spun off into being high-speed space-based navigation systems, and during that work and a few missions, we collected data, and as a part of my work, I created a new mathematical model describing how the space-time is constructed around the rotating Earth. And in that model that I created, I noticed some very interesting relationships with regards to time. And that once I realized what was there, it became an absolute passion. And at probably about that point in time is when I shifted my focus and I became very interested in space-time physics.
Wow. So I know that some of the things that you've, at least that you've looked into, are some of the different cover-ups and so forth. Is that correct? Am I correct?
Well, I'm familiar with some of the legends of the great experiments in time. I'm more familiar with the actual activities that have been in operation in the former Soviet Union, in Japan, in India, here in the United States. My background is really more along the lines of the scientific community, less than the paranormal or the spiritual. But we do believe, Doug, that to understand the nature of time, one can't put it in one box. You can't describe it from a scientific view. You can't define it only from a spiritual view. You have to look at it from a multidisciplinary approach. And if you don't do that, you'll be like our society has been for 2,000 years, struggling and still yet unable to define what is time.
Yeah, no kidding. So what do you think time is?
It's a sphere. It's a sphere. Time is actually, and actually that's not a joke, but it's a much longer conversation than for the radio. But our belief from what we see in the laboratory, as well as from our partners and colleagues around the world who are in the middle of this research every day, is that time is an illusionary product of our mind, created by our biological and cultural evolution. There are so many different views across culture of time, and we know that the way our senses perceive time is very flawed, and it doesn't correctly represent the actual nature of time in our universe. So when we look past that, it really is an illusionary product of our mind, but it does have some very real constructs as well.
Yeah, you know, that is such a fascinating thing, you know, exactly what is time, and, you know, it's the question that's been put out there. And hard to define, you know, it's...
Well, if you look at it, it's been for millennia, you know, human society on this planet has been wrestling with defining it. It's been defined as everything from the moving image of eternity to the number of or measure of motion by Aristotle. Later, Plotinus described it as a productive life of the soul. But then St. Augustine in the 4th century really described it very accurately in a way that stands today as an illusionary product of our mind.
That's the thing. And I know you said that you know, you're along the lines of the academic community, which is fine. I mean, we are as well, believe it or not. I mean, one of the things that we really focus on is grounded research, not fringe, not things that just are not rational. But what you're talking about here really gets into the metaphysical realm, doesn't it?
Well,
I mean,
you know,
if time is an illusion.
Yeah, well, you know, that's probably one of the most exciting things about this point in the history of this planet, is that in the past, the common views of time have always been separated into the metaphysical or the spiritual or the scientific, or you could list several different other categories. But today, what's happening, if we really take a look at what's coming out of the particle accelerators and super colliders and what's coming out of the new quantum mechanics and the new world of physics, what it's showing us, science is showing us, that the world is a dynamic web of information and energy, and that everything and everybody in it is connected, connected in a way that even requires faster than light communications between points that are so far separated that, and basically what modern science is showing is that energy can transmute into matter, matter into energy, everything's connected. And you know what that sounds like, Doug and Grant? That's exactly the fundamental premises of the ancient views of Buddhism, Hinduism, and Taoism that
Absolutely.
Have held sacred for thousands of years.
Yep.
We're simply rediscovering ancient wisdom. And what we really recommend to our staff is that really they're not two separate things. It's one and the same in understanding the true nature of time.
Huh.
Well, do you think it's, Doctor, do you think it's uniquely, I mean, obviously it is, but I mean, if there were aliens, if we can extrapolate and say there's aliens out there, do you think that they are going to be as focused on time as humans would be?
I mean, it's
a hard question to answer, but.
I think the answer would be no. Would aliens be focused on this the same way? And part of this is, if I could take just a short minute, one of my favorite works, it's outside of the scientific realm, but it was a book by Edwin Abbott in the 1880s called Flatlands. It was about these two-dimensional creatures that live on a flat in a flat world, like a flat piece of paper. And they're like little dots that move around until they bump in lines or go into little open boxes which represent their home. Until one day, when a sphere, a three-dimensional sphere, fell down and passed through their two-dimensional world. And if you can visualize it for your listeners, what would happen is the sphere touched the paper, their world. All of a sudden, a dot would appear. Then it would grow, become bigger. Then it would shrink, and then it would disappear as it moved through the paper. To those two-dimensional creatures, they couldn't understand that higher-dimensional being. And the same thing is true with us. We know that the world and our universe is composed of many dimensions that we simply cannot sense with the limited senses of the human body. And I think aliens who have harnessed the power of traveling great distance through space or time would have a better understanding of that. And we also have to understand it's not just about races. Even on this planet, not just about the biological evolution, but cultural evolution. You and I would say time moves forward like an arrow of time. If you said that to a Buddhist monk, they would look at you totally confused. They'd say, wait, no, all time exists here at once. There are even cultures on this planet, some right here in the Americas. In North America, we have the Hopi Indians and the Navajo. In South America, we have the Piraha tribe. In their languages, they have no words for past, present, and future. They never talk about the temporal quality of something happening, only the quality of an event. So it's not just about race.
All the time.
Exactly. And it's not just about the race, then, about aliens or here or one species. It's about even within a species, time is a product of our cultural evolution. And the data shows that across this small planet.
You know, I really agree with you, and Doug and I have kicked this around many times before, and I've referred to it, the multiverse, as like a tapestry, this wonderful, magnificent tapestry of all everybody's interconnected, and it just, you know, when you start thinking of those possibilities, it just opens up completely new horizons.
Oh, you're absolutely right. The multiverse is such a beautiful thing, and this is where. Finally, the worlds of science and spirituality, mm-hmm. which grew apart, that used to be intertwined, they grew apart and now kind of have separated the masses of this planet. Now, all of a sudden, they're merging back together again. And people will see the magic of that tapestry. And our hope is it'll help people unite, learn, and grow together.
I agree.
I think people lose sight of the fact that science is just as much in awe of the beautiful and the magnificent. And I think sometimes like any other discipline, they lose sight of that. And so maybe with the way that it is, if we can prove all these theories that are going on now, maybe that's the beauty in it, that we'll see the duality and embrace that.
Yeah, that's the hard part because, for us, I mentioned just before the show, I do a lot of time speaking with college students, young future physicists or mathematicians, and one of the greatest barriers for them to become a great physicist in space-time physics is to overcome the fact and accept the fact that their senses are limited. Our senses are like that old-fashioned television set sitting on the desk, maybe not old-fashioned for us, but in through the air are waves of information and energy that represent television signals. And on the television is a tuner. And we tune that. And we can tap into some part of that information and energy. And our human minds are like that. Our universe, the multiverse, that magical tapestry you're talking about, is a very complex web of information and energy with multiple dimensions. And unfortunately, our mind is a TV tuner that only taps into a very small microscopic part of that macroscopic tapestry. And a student has to understand that. And once they understand that their senses are limited and they have to overcome that biological and cultural evolution, a door opens and the learning becomes very exciting.
Yeah, well, that's a big step. That's a very big step for people, because that really says that you kind of surrender, that you surrender to the fact that, you know, that there's things that you can't possibly know, or that, you know, that you can only speculate on.
Yeah, and it's amazing that we have to put it in terms of our science before we will accept it. The fact that energy can transform into matter and matter back into energy, we never accept it until we can see it or sense it with science. But science is only a small subset of things that we try to rationalize within our limited senses. And
well, you know, one thing I really appreciate about some in the scientific community is that they are open-minded. You know, they are open-minded to possibilities. I mean, it's so interesting to me that, what, maybe 10, 20 years ago, you know, the whole concept of exoplanets or even, you know, alien life just seemed to be kind of one of those subjects you don't touch, you know, as an astronomer or in that realm, in that field. And now, you know, how many planets have we discovered outside of our own solar system? Well over 300, I think. And it's now becoming such a good subject to talk about, to get into. And, I mean, look at the progress that we've made. I mean, if you think about the multiverse, you know, membrane theory, all that, quantum physics, I mean, some of that, I mean, how many years ago? I mean, just a few years ago, a decade or two or three, it's like, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, but it's almost like, that's fantasy. That's like Adam and Eve stuff.
Yeah, and on the other hand, you know, a lot of people ask the question, you know, you touched on it first, is that, you know, before a reputable scientist announcing that he believed in alien cultures or in time control technology would be creating professional suicide.
Right.
But in a way, you know, it's sad. A lot of people ask, why do some of the scientists in the media not talk about this? Well, in some cases, they're unaware. Not every scientist is in the middle of this like those that work in the research every day. Sometimes people are unwilling to respond to questions about it because it's professional suicide. But other times they're unable to respond simply because it's, you know, they're aware of what's going on and there's confidentiality there. But there's so many reasons. But a good example would be just recently and this is something I'd like to see change in the scientific community. While the scientific community has come very far, and as I go to physics conferences, we spend more time at the bar at night talking about spiritual issues than physics.
But, yeah, I bet. You know, I bet you
well, we
do
love
know.
It. We talk about the morals, the ethical, the spiritual, the dynamic webs of energy and consciousness. It's more than the classical space-time physics. But people ask, like, for example, Stephen Hawking just earlier this month came on national TV and said, I believe in time travel and time travel to the future. Well, wait a minute. This is 110 years after, 100 plus years after Einstein proposed relativity. It's 80 years after it was proven that Einstein's theories of relativity were correct. 80 years before a reputable physicist feels comfortable. Now, behind the scenes, I got to tell you, I've met Stephen Hawking. I've met many other physicists. Many of them believe in it. Many times they're under contract working. They can't talk about it. But a lot of times it's just professional suicide they're trying to avoid as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So let's talk about experiments and time control. I mean, you talk about what you can talk about, obviously. But you know what? You mentioned some other governments. What are the governments of the world doing in this regard?
It's absolutely fascinating what's happening, especially within the last 15 years. At the Anderson Institute, which was previously the Time Technology Research Center on Long Island, we've been active for about 25 years. The Soviet Union was active since the 1960s. But today, there's some very interesting groups. China, I've had a chance to meet with their National People's Congress, representatives from that group for education, science, and culture, their Ministry of Science and Technology. They're making moves right now to get into this and to develop the capabilities. Japan is already there. They're a partner doing autonomous control systems for our time reactor, but they even have a complete facility just north of Kyoto City where they're working transmission of information forward and backwards in time. Russia has always been active. When the former Soviet Union fell, they lost about 10 to 12 years of work, but they're picking it back up again. In the United States, you know, we've got S4 just away from Area 51. We've got Dr. Mallett at the University of Connecticut, who will be launching some initiatives soon, the Anderson Institute. But the real one, Doug and Grant, that just is an amazing story is India. Their DRDO, which is their Defense Research and Development Organization, has a effort in time control technology, both in research, development, commercialization, and application development that is 10 times larger than all the other world efforts combined. And it's just absolutely amazing what's going on around the world, which is one of the reasons why we've come forward now, is because the technology is now so proliferated, even if it's kept somewhat private in these agencies or governments, it's so proliferated now that it needs to come out in the open because of the consequences of the improper application of the technology.
Well, let me just ask you a question. What would be the reasoning behind sending messages into the past and the future in an attempt to change events?
Well, it depends who you ask and their moral and ethical foundation. You know, some people would want to be able to retrieve information and to view history so they could review and record and document history. Imagine we could watch documentaries with actual footage of events that happened. We could actually watch the dinosaurs walking around, even though many producers tell me that would be much less exciting than the computer simulations we have today. But the big one for sending information forward and backward in time from I'd say a positive bent for society would be, say, the transmission of information from the future for the avoidance of disasters, natural disasters or man-made disasters, to avoid suffering, to retrieve future cures for diseases like diabetes, cancer, and AIDS from the future, different things that could basically reduce the suffering of population. Other people look at it as, just to be very direct and short, they look at weaponization of the technologies, and you can't underestimate, and it's something that I really, really like to share with users. This technology has extreme implications, and when you look at a breakthrough like this, Doug and Grant, it offers not just commercial prospects, tremendous commercial prospects for profit, that you get incredible amounts of focus from private sectors and private enterprise, but you also have to factor into that equation not just the financial aspirations and the powers of the large businesses, but the political and economical aspirations and power of governments. And to be blunt, the fundamental purpose of a nation today is, number one, to survive, and number two, to prosper. And every school on strategy, no matter how moral and ethical we all are, every school and strategy says you must keep technologies to yourself and under the radar as a strategic advantage for your nation to survive and prosper. So the governments are looking many times at weaponization, at reengineering timelines to provide advantages.
So where are we, Doctor? I mean, where are we in terms of what are our capabilities? Are we able to move in time, backwards and forwards at this stage of the game?
Absolutely. Most of the technology.
Can we be sure that the past hasn't already been changed? And if there's a multiverse, can we be sure that we're not in some oddball timeline?
Well, boy, you just asked three questions there.
Yes.
Which one would you like me to tackle first?
Whatever one you feel comfortable with.
First off, status of the technology. I can go by country. In Japan, they're doing superluminal propagation of information. Essentially what they're doing is they're exercising capabilities and developing capabilities, sending information forward, backwards in time. This is very similar to what the U.S. government funded with the SNEC through Princeton University about 6 or 7 years ago, something Russia's been involved with for decades. The United States is very active in using fields of closed time-like curves. And maybe I should just be a little simpler. There's two capabilities today. There's two fundamental technologies, and there's two capabilities. One is the ability to transmit information forward and backwards in time that does not violate special relativity. And the other is to send matter or living organisms and experience that and expose them to accelerated time rates or time rates that are reduced. And all of those are being exercised. Japan is working with information only. Russia is working with information and has begun experiments on matter and living organisms. The United States is very active in both, and India is far ahead of them all in both. They've moved way past these capabilities.
All right, so let me just make sure that what you just said resonates, first and foremost in my own head, but with everybody. Are you saying that to one extent or another, you said we could send information back and forth to the past, to the future, but also matter, living organisms?
That's correct. It is possible today, and maybe I'll break them both down for your viewers.
Yeah.
It's possible using the technique of quantum tunneling to actually send information faster than the speed of light. A good example would be, for those of you who would like to read a little bit on a public project, Dr. Lejun Wang at the University, Princeton University, he injected data streams into a 10 centimeter long cesium chamber. And essentially what happened was the leading edge of the signal actually exited the cesium chamber before it finished entering. It was essentially using quantum tunneling to travel faster than the speed of light. Now, that's not matter, it's information, so it's not violating the laws of physics. But essentially, when you send information faster than the speed of light, you're moving it backwards in time. And agencies have been building on that and expanding their capacities to do that. Now, with regards to sending matter and living organisms, it's possible within a laboratory using several different techniques to create concentrated fields of what are called closed time-like curves. That's essentially a field in which you can actually modulate or control how fast the time moves, either speed it up or slow it down, relative to the time rate outside of the field.
So that has the net effect of matter or an organism moving ahead or behind?
Essentially, you can put a living organism in the field, and you can either slow down the rate of time that's passing and bring it back out of the field, where it only experienced a short duration of time, everything outside of the field experienced a much longer, or vice versa, you can accelerate the time rates.
So the actual matter or living organism is not actually transporting to another time? As we might understand it from Hollywood and all.
Actually, no, that's not correct. Actually, using and unfortunately this requires a little bit of description. A lot of viewers are exposed to the phenomenon of Einstein's special theory of relativity. When objects travel fast relative to those that are left behind, time changes. For example, that astronaut who travels off to a distant star and returns will return much younger. She might have aged 20 years while her younger brother aged 200 years on Earth had passed. That's using relativistic capabilities. There's a phenomenon in physics called closed time-like curves. It's the ability where time can loop back on itself. And using closed time-like curves, and this was proposed back in the 1940s by Kurt Gödel, and it's a fundamental premise of many technologies, our time warp field technology, the Casimir effect, cosmic strings, and other types of fundamentals in physics that actually allow you to send not just information, but matter or living organisms back in time without traveling faster than the speed of light. And it's called a closed time-like curve for your user listeners that want to read up on that.
Wow. So how's this been used?
It's been used, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy to talk here today. It's been used on initially for information. And then in the 1990s, for example, in our laboratory, we began experimenting in our second-generation time warp field generator with living plant organisms. Now today, in India, and the United States, and we believe in Russia, experiments are actually going underway now with human test subjects, where the capabilities vary, Doug and Grant. The capabilities to either move forward or backwards in time vary based upon the location and the type of technology being used, but it's being used now. And in all honesty, that's where a big concern comes in.
Yeah.
Because what you're essentially doing is you're re-engineering a historical timeline. You're re-engineering history.
Mm-hmm.
And why some scientists believe that in the laboratory we can do tests and control it, the problem is that our imaginations and our intellectual capabilities cannot predict the complex interdependencies and the ripple effects that even the smallest change from the best intention could have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so,
yeah.
You know, if I could, you know, when the scientists are...
Sound of Thunder from Ray Bradbury, you know, crush a butterfly and everything, all timelines change.
But it's very complicated beyond that, because it's not just about timelines changing. It's about, you know, the possibility of redefining
political
individual
changes. Sure. Yeah. But here's my question. If we could just digress for a second, Doctor.
Sure.
How did the people in the past receive those messages? Are they in the form of thought transmissions to them?
Well, in the case of, let's talk about information. In the case of this type of transmission, you're using a chamber. Say for example, let's use the example of a cesium chamber, which is very common in this type of work. Essentially, once you set that up, and it's been up for a period of time, you then have the ability to send information backwards in time. In the case of Princeton, they were only doing it at a fraction of a second. But with more capabilities and the development that's underway, those capacities have grown quite extensive.
Well, from an intelligence standpoint, you know, if you had that ability, you could change the whole political landscape of wherever.
Absolutely.
You could change it anyway. You could change all geopolitics, who's got the oil, who's
markets,
got the power. Everything could be manipulated by that. And if that's where we're going, and it sounds like we are, that's really, really scary. I mean, these people don't want to tell us anything, and if they're doing that kind of stuff, that doesn't make me rest very easy.
Well, this is why we talk about the, you know, the weaponization of the technology, and this is the concern now. We even talk about that it's possible, with the number of governments and agencies who are active in testing now, is that this is a very real concern, and many scientists are extremely concerned. Even the scientific community that are in the middle of this research every day, they're now split. They think the technology needs to go public, because if we don't provide transparency and disclosure, deliver education on what's being done, and come up with a moral compass to guide the further development and use, we're really heading for the world's and this planet's first great time war, and that's what we're looking at. And the challenge is that these scientists think they can predict what the consequences are of these actions. The best intentions we see can go wrong. And I'm going to burst a bubble for all our listeners, Doug and Grant, here on Paranexus Universe. We've learned some things in the laboratory. We have a series of tests we call Brothers and Sisters. I won't go into it. And this concept of parallel universes, that if you go backwards in time and you change something, your timeline stays intact while another one branches off, simply is not true. Things like the grandfather paradox, simply a place where our rational mind bumps into our limitations. If a living organism is moved backwards in time and their predecessor is destroyed, the predecessor is destroyed, that living organism that went back in time will now move forward through time, but the construct of reality will change. The construct of individual lives, the construct of consciousnesses will have changed. You've essentially re-engineered history in a way that's so complex that it's probably beyond our capacity to predict.
It's frightening.
Wow.
What the ripples and ramifications would be.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, the technological possibilities are so enormous that the only limitations now on what we do with it are the results of our insufficient imagination. And unfortunately...
So the question that begs to be asked at this point, Doctor, is who opened Pandora's box and how long ago did this occur? Who were the people that cook this whole thing up?
Oh, I hate to go into that conversation because then you start maybe labeling a little bit about Pandora's box or the good and the evil. In the end, we're all part of that same dynamic web of energy and that same tapestry. So the good and evil is all part and one of the same.
Yeah, I know. I kind of cast it in that fashion. Yeah. But gosh, that really is Pandora's box because, I mean, look, that's going to let out a lot of. I mean, how do you.
It was,
for
it was
every
bound
good
to
thing.
Happen.
Yeah.
It was bound to happen. You know, when did it start with Einstein's special theory of relativity? Where it got really interesting is when Kurt Gödel, a German mathematician in the 1940s, proposed closed time-like curves, a way to go back in time without going faster than the speed of light. Frank Tipler wrote a paper back in 1965 about how to build a time machine in space that has never been refuted. It required some exotic material, but it basically showed the fundamental premise. And what's happened in the last three decades is that the capability to recreate closed time-like curves in the laboratory and create fields of those for time control experiments has just blossomed. And now the technology is everywhere, essentially.
So technically you could manipulate political events not by communicating with one person, but by manipulating information that's somehow given to the populace or given somebody a false lead, information, disinformation. Oh, my gosh. That's really scary.
And you ask a question I didn't answer earlier. Has this been done? And the short answer is being done every week. We have Japan doing exercises. We have India. We have the former Soviet Union in two locations. We have three locations in the United States. We have China with the second largest R&D budget in the world getting ready to make an entry. It's happening every day. There's a lot of people say that some of the biggest shifts, a lot of people believe, and I can't comment as a scientist, that, you know, we do see, though, that about 2% of the population is very gifted. Their minds are naturally tuned into sensing time or be able to transcend time. And there's a lot of people who tell us all the time that the 1990s, the late 1990s, they began to sense a lot of different things happening, that things weren't just right and that they felt that timelines were being adjusted. And it is happening every day.
You know, perhaps the bigger question, this is also dealt with or asked in the chat room, and I'll just read this question and add mine to it. Are we responsible enough to be dealing with this type of technology? Are we so busy thinking can we that we do not think about the should we? And that is really what I was thinking. You know, do we have the moral evolution, the emotional evolution as a species? You know, does any species have it for this type of a volatile technology?
I would respond to that two ways. First off, it's too late to ask the question because Pandora's box has been opened. But let me go ahead and answer the question.
Good answer.
If we really do look at the philosophical basis underlying human ethics, we've always operated as a society on this planet, regardless of our differences, on a principle that says the greater our knowledge and power, the greater the need for moral responsibility as a foundation. Until recently, even though we've danced on the edge of the razor blade, we could say the principle has been highly effective. Our human capacity for moral reasoning kept pace with our power of our technologies. But when you look at time control science and you look at what's being done and the capacity literally not just to re-engineer history but to phase in living organisms and consciousness in and out of existence, this rapid increase in technological possibilities is almost impossible now for our ethical thinking to keep pace. And the issue is no longer whether or not we should acquire this knowledge and explore it. It's too late. Now the question is how to use it and how to regulate it. And this is a big part where the Anderson Institute has stepped forward. We do expect shortly that we'll see some colleagues in India and Japan stepping forward as well.
That's great. Maybe we need a new priesthood, Doctor.
Well, you know, if we look at the solution, we're trying to do something that hasn't been done. We see
maybe
a four-step.
We do need a new religion.
We do need a new religion, actually.
Yes, we do.
If you look at what needs to be done, we need full transparency and disclosure if we're going to avoid a global catastrophe with this technology. Number two, we need an educational program that spans every individual on this planet. Number three, we need to develop a moral compass, and number four, we need to regulate it. But let's go back to number three. We need to develop a moral compass guided by the global consciousness of this planet that determines how we develop and this uses technology that spans all lines of nations, geographic lines, political lines, lines of religion, language, and spirituality. If we're going to survive this, or if we don't want to go through a lot of pain before we survive it, we need to come up with...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Doctor, but do you think that maybe there's some people out there that are acting in our best interests and are trying to speed our development to the point where we can... Are we talking about these various factions fighting against one another?
Are we
caught in some gigantic morality play here?
Absolutely.
All the religious background we've been brought up with, we're between, you know, the heaven and earth here.
Well, you know, I have to say it because I want to be careful for your audience. There are people who are looking at the wonderful medical applications, the ability to put people in stasis fields to reduce damage after an injury, for example, or for surgery, to accelerate research, to view and record history, to retrieve future cures. There's a people whose hearts and spirits are only in the avoidance of disaster and suffering and the good of society and the global population. But there are a lot of people who are trying to apply the technology for profit and for political advantage or for weaponization. Uh-huh. And that's where it gets very, very, very dangerous. It's a mix right now between what we see. But the time control technologies that are being exercised in the lab today absolutely not only hold the potential, probably are already beginning to change our lives and realities in ways that's very difficult for us to comprehend.
All right. How do you think it's going to impact us 20 years from now?
Well, I would say the future's uncertain. I see two paths.
No pun intended, huh?
Yeah. That's why the name of our next documentary is Time Will No Longer Tell. And we're going to really work to share a lot about what's going on around the world and what's been observed. And I would encourage your listeners to watch for this because we've learned a lot about the nature of time. This concept of parallel universes, none of our counterparts around the world see the support for that. Do they see multiple dimensions and multiple dimensions in reality? Absolutely, yes. There's so many things we learn every day.
All right, we're going to take a call. We've had somebody on hold for almost 40 minutes, so we're going to take a chance. And area code 831, you're on the air. What's your first name?
Hi, my first name is Christina, and I'm calling from California.
Hi, Christina.
Hey, welcome, Christina.
Do you have a question
Thank
for
you.
Dr. Anderson?
No, just a comment. I really enjoy listening to this information because your guest here is very, very insightful. And not only that, but he intertwines morality in with the science. And the two, in my opinion, must go hand in hand.
Agreed.
And I'm just blown away. And I'm very, very excited at the same time because this is something that resonates with me and something that I believe in. And I'm just glad that you're sharing the information. And, you know, I'm just listening. And I'm really happy I can also go back and download this show. That's the wonderful thing about Blog Talk. I'm a mother, and I have three little ones running around. And just been really enjoying the show. I'm grilling a steak outside, and this is a great conversation.
Good for you. Well, good for you.
Wish you guys were here. I would share some.
Oh, Christina, thank you for calling in. Thank you for the kind words, Christina.
Yes. Oh, you're so welcome. Would it be okay if I just listen in and hit mute on my phone?
Yes, that would be fine.
Absolutely.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Calling.
Have a great night.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thank you,
you
so much.
Bye-bye.
All right, so nice comment.
Yep.
Let's, Dr. Anderson, if I could, one of the things that we do at Paranexus is the open-minded search for whatever's true, right? I mean, I call it the true scientific method, you know, discover whatever it is that's out there, regardless of what that means. So a lot of the things that we focus on are really taking perhaps a different look at some of the quote, paranormal, unquote, things that have been occurring for eons on this planet, things that are unexplainable. And we're looking at this whole multidimensional thing. You know, could that be playing a part? The different dimensions, interdimensional beings. You know, we try to look at things that really have some sort of a scientific basis anyway. And at the same time, we're not opposed to try to think a little bit outside the box in order to to try to discover new ways of looking at things. So this multidimensional thing, from your perspective, I'm gathering that you do subscribe to the concept or the theory of multi-universes. Am I correct?
Yes, I do, with one exception. The use of the word in the English language, universe, means one.
Right.
We tend to prefer to call it interdimensionality, multidimensionality. We exist in some dimensions of one reality. There are many dimensions that we could say make up other realities. Simply, they're just other dimensions that we're unable to sense, but they're part of the same universe. So it's a little play on words, but we tend to try to be very specific.
Would these other realities involve life forms?
Absolutely.
Logically? Okay.
At the end of the day, what we sense as reality is just our consciousness and the construct of the information and energy and consciousness that makes up us and how we perceive and sense things around us. And there's so much more than that, as we talked about earlier.
So from a physics point of view, is it possible that these other realities overlap with ours at times?
Absolutely. I think what we see is they not only just necessarily overlap, it's all one in the same. And it might be the basis for the phenomenon that many people observe, but what we see in the laboratory clearly is many dimensions within this reality, only a very small fraction of which we can sense. We don't believe in parallel universes or parallel realities. We do believe that there are other realities with other beings existing at the same same universe at the same time.
So there's not an infinite number of us in all sorts of different outcomes out there.
It's not what we see. We actually have an experiment what we call brothers and sisters, where we put generations inside a time warp field of younger generations of seedlings inside a field. We send it backwards in time. An event has changed. When it's returned in time, it has a record of the generations that were there, but what comes back is totally different than what is recorded on the same record that comes back with them. And what it shows us is that the grandfather paradox, again, it's not a paradox. It's simply a place where our rational minds bumps into our own minds and bodies and senses perceptions.
Okay, so there's not parallel universes with an infinite number or an infinite number of parallel universes with us in it, right? I mean, there's some universe somewhere or some reality somewhere where Doug's president.
That's correct, and I'm glad you said it that way, because there's not another reality where Doug is president or something else. There very well could be another reality where that information and energy and dimensions we don't sense has transformed into other consciousness, but not a replication of Doug.
Okay. Here's a question from the chat room.
Would you want two of them, by the way?
Hey, the world can't handle one.
Okay, I just wanted to check.
Mini-me.
Yeah, really. You know, so many problems, so few Dougs. Okay, question from the chat room. What's your view on Andrew, is it Basagio, and Project Pegasus?
You know, I don't know Andrew well. I have communicated with him via, I'd say, a half a dozen or so emails. While I was working for Air Force Systems Command, I did three projects for DARPA. I was contracted out to them, contracted in the way I was working for Air Force Systems Command and just doing some project work for DARPA. I understand he worked there. We did not work there at the same time on the same project. Other than that, I tend not to be judgmental, and I do remind everybody is that if we want to understand the nature of time, we have to take in everything. We have to, and Andrew has some very interesting perspectives on the nature of time and experiments in time.
Cool. Well, you know, you're so interesting. I mean, my mind is going 1,000 miles an hour here, trying to come up with the questions I need to ask you in the 10 minutes that's left. You know, for according to our work, do you have any perspectives that you want to share on the possibility of extraterrestrial life visiting our planet, researching us, or here?
Oh, well, it's interesting. It's not necessarily a an area of expertise for me, clearly. The only thing I can say, first off, with regards to interdimensional beings, as was mentioned before, it clearly is true that there are many dimensions our senses can't perceive. We know that. It's just taking, you know, science a couple hundred years to loop back and show that if we look at science, we're going to see the same thing that's been expressed in spiritual and metaphysical beliefs for thousands of years. So we're kind of going the slow road there. Clearly, we see that. We also see, if we look at the observations that people make about extraterrestrial beings, and then we consider the characteristics of those observations, what they discuss with regards to light, sound, motion, it's very consistent with what you would see if you were to use modern-day technology, extrapolate a little bit further to create a craft that would travel through time or great distances through space. So there's a lot of consistency between those observations and what the technology would look like. And clearly there's the opportunity for interdimensional beings, and we have to believe that they exist there, even though we haven't surfaced any in any of our experiments.
So that was going to be my next question. Are there any future people here?
I think my short answer to that is,
who knows?
I would say absolutely yes. You have to, you know, from my perspective, it's easy for me to say. It's hard to project it to your listeners.
Sure.
People, there are time control field technologies active, different ways, different forms, in five countries around the world today. They are moving living organisms, including people, into fields and speeding up, slowing down, or regressing time rates. This is truly happening now. The challenge is that the effect, it's not just a person appearing. When you move an object through time, and I'll go back to the grandfather paradox, because I want to hit it home with your listeners. If you were to go back into one of these fields, into a time warp field, and travel back in time and kill your grandfather, you would still exist. Your grandfather wouldn't. His consciousness and his information and energy would transform. And that action, as you were to traverse, say, the normal course through time forward, would redefine individual lives. Some would phase out of existence. Some would phase into existence. The construct of reality has changed. So it's not just an issue of one person or one alien life form moving through time. It's the issue of the butterfly effect, as you said earlier, of every one of these small changes going on today.
All right, so there are perhaps people from the future, humans from the future here, doing whatever. All right. Good answer. Next question is, when the governments are experimenting with these biological, you know, whatever, animals, humans, whatever, do they actually disappear? That was a question in the chat room. I mean, do they actually disappear from this timeline and appear in another one?
It's absolutely fascinating. The effect varies based upon technology, and it varies based upon whether you're accelerating, slowing down, or regressing time rates. Essentially, what you see is, for example, I can talk about what we do. When we form a time warp field, it's a spectacular event. There is a chemical reagent, high-powered lasers, a rotating electromagnetic field, a great amount of energy, light, and sound. A field is formed, it stabilizes, and then we can move objects in and out of the field and begin to modulate it and change time rates. What you see as a user is very spectacular as first, or as a witness. Then what you'll see is actually what appears to be a watery texture, but it's not. It's just the light being essentially Dopplered through the boundary layer of the time control field. But you actually can see through these fields. It'll move to a little bit of opaqueness, a little bit less opaqueness depending on what you're doing, but you can actually see into the field. When you regress time, the field gets very opaque and it's hard to see things, but you can actually put objects.
Oh, I think we may have lost. Yeah, Dr. Anderson, are you there? I can hear you, Grant, yes. We lost Dr. Anderson. We'll get him back here. Try to get him back right away. That was interesting. Let's see if we can get him back on here. Fascinating topic.
Absolutely.
Fascinating topic.
It's so complex, and it's there's so many different different dimensions to the whole thing, in the sense of where it can go, what can happen. Crush one butterfly, and boy, oh boy, you can have all kinds of trouble.
Yeah.
How are you doing there, Doug? Are we getting through to him?
Yeah, he is there. He's chatting me.
Good.
I don't know.
Good.
So we just had a connect. At least, Dr. Anderson,
you
back? Oh, yeah.
Hey, sorry. We got
Hello, Doug.
Dropped.
Yeah, you just kind of faded out on us. All right.
Somebody was trying to send us some information, I think.
Yeah.
Still there?
The Skype gods don't want you to answer that question. No, you just lost him again.
Just lost him again. That's weird.
Very odd. So let me try to get him back, check our time. We've got 4 minutes remaining. While I'm trying to get Dr. Anderson back,
Hello,
you back?
Doug.
Yeah. Wow. Odd.
That doesn't happen like that.
No, not one. I mean, sometimes we all get dropped, but not just one. Maybe there's a weird connection. He can't hear us. Are you there, Dr. Anderson? Let me try him one more time.
Oh, there we are.
Oh, there you
are.
Oh, good.
I can hear you now.
Okay, good. Yeah, we're down to about 4 minutes or less. So you were describing that. So do the subjects actually disappear from this timeline and maybe reappear in a few minutes when they send them, or to the time that they send them? Is that how it works?
Yeah, actually, if you're accelerating or slowing down time rates, observing the field, you can actually see, if it's like a mechanical clock or any other type of object, you can actually visually see this with a little bit of opaqueness and a watery effect due to the lighting effects, or the way light's treated in the boundary layer. You can actually see it. When we regress time rates, the field goes very opaque, and we cannot see. But we actually can regress time rates inside a field to move objects back in time. We can even see that to some degree.
Which way does the field move, Doctor? So I think I'm finally getting what you're saying here, in a sense that you can place an object within the field, and then by moving the field, then by which direction the field moves, it either it's going forward or backwards in time? Is that halfway close?
We actually modulate the field. There's not required for motion. You know, when you're using a closed time like curve-based technology, there's no need for motion. This happens. The effect happens within the field itself.
So, how far ahead have they moved somebody or a biological agent?
That's something, unfortunately, that we're not at liberty to talk about. We've talked about it before. We've had the ability to accelerate time rates several 100% to speed up time in a field. Mm-hmm. We've had the ability to slow time rates. We actually have an experiment. I don't know if you've ever seen these mechanical clocks. We have the balls that move back and forth and drop.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have experiments where we can stop the clock.
All right,
so
we're going to have to
see Paul. Hang on, I got one question.
Real
for those people that are in that sphere, what are they observing? Are
they
fast? Are we going slow? Can they see us still?
Actually, believe it or not, it's harder to see outside of the field. But inside the field, other than the unusual environment of being inside of a field and some of the noises and the lighting effects, there really isn't a great effect on a living organism inside the field. It's just a new and unusual environment, which is the biggest effect.
All right, we are down to under 2 minutes. I would love to talk to you for a long time on this, but perhaps in the future we can have you come back and pick up the conversation.
Oh, it would be a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's
we'd
been
love to have
absolutely
you come back,
fascinating.
Doc.
And real quick, for those of you who are not familiar with Paranexus, we invite you to come and join us at paranexus.org. We have an association. We have ParanexusAcademy.org. You can learn. We have a lot of things going on, and we looking for the truth. Of course, we're in anomalous research, and Paranexus is an association for anomalous researchers, unlike any other. So come take a look. We'd love to have you join us. We're a nonprofit corporation, really, whose mission is to understand the human condition better. And Dr. Anderson, it's been an absolute pleasure and honor to have you on our program tonight. Thank you.
Yeah.
Doug and Grant, thank you as well. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to the opportunity to speak again in the future.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll look forward to having you back on the show, and maybe we'll give you 90 minutes next time.
Or the past. You're a hoot.
There you go. I love it.
And to our listeners, we appreciate your time and interest in our show, and hopefully you will be able to join us next week as well. Take a look at the schedule. Times are running out, so I don't really have time to get into that, but we do appreciate your support. We hope everyone has a great night and a great week. Good night.
And thanks for the nice compliments from California. We appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Sky. It's Paranexus Universe.